We are a rainbow people. The rainbow is an arc of light, brilliantly displaying all the colors of the visible spectrum, all the colors that combine to make the astounding beauty of our world and its diversity of human expression. We are red people who respect others. We are orange people who offer faith and kind treatment. We are yellow people yearning for learning. We are green people who grow in our search for truth and meaning. We are blue people who believe in what we are achieving. We are indigo people insisting on freedom, love, and peace. We are violet people valuing the web that does not cease and we did not create. We are a rainbow people. Together, what we give heals and transforms our world. This is our covenant, our bridge of heaven, our dream, and our reality. As many of you know, I am a homosexual. I've been one all of my life, but please, don't be fooled. I haven't always been this suave, hunky piece of gay man you see before you today. Coming out of the closet took a lot of hard work. It took a lot of years, and yes, it took a village, a neighborhood, a gayberhood, if you will. Coming out is one of the hardest things to do in life, and for me, it was no different. But I was lucky. When I finally admitted to my sexuality, I had friends and family who helped me make the transition from being the person I pretended to be to becoming the person I was. A whole being filled with good and bad qualities alike who just happened to be gay. Now, before I get ahead of myself, I'd like to admit that this is my story, and it is far from a universal tale. No one coming out story is the same as anyone else's, but by examining my journey to self-acceptance, I hope to draw parallels for every person's life, LGBTQ or not. That being said, allow me to go back in time to 1970, to be exact, 1 year after the Stonewall riots. Although at that time, I doubt I even knew the riots even happened. But it was that year when I admitted, to myself at least, that I was that way. Once I had acknowledged that, all that was left for me to do was discover what being that way meant to me and to others. Now, I'd guess that most adolescents turn to movies and records, books, or even their parents, heaven sakes, to help them navigate their way into the world of adulthood. Being gay in 1970, I had no one. I knew no one who admitted to being queer, and pop culture wasn't very helpful on that count either. One of the top grossing movies was Love Story, a tale of a boy and a girl who, well, we all know that story. The Beatles released Let It Be. Yet for me at 13, that song touted messages I didn't want to hear. When all the broken-hearted people in the world agree, there will be an answer. Let it be. I didn't want to wait around till everyone in the world agreed on something, and I certainly didn't want to be broken-hearted. Now I know what you're thinking. It was 1970, for heaven's sakes. Nothing was gay at that time. But there was a lot of homophobia. That year, Los Angeles' police chief, Ed Davis, opposed his city's first pride parade. He said, "As far as I'm concerned, granting a parade permit to a group of homosexuals to parade down Hollywood Boulevard would be the same as giving a permit to a group of thieves and murderers." And in the press, the New York Post described gay men as slim-waisted freak creeps. With all that happening, I was a long way away from taking pride for being gay. And much to my sadness, I thought that perhaps I'd never have a family of my own. But I decided that I could still have a life. All I needed to do was keep my mouth shut and not reveal too much about myself, lest someone discover my secret. Yet it was a transformative period in my life nonetheless, because something remarkable happened. At the University of Minnesota, a law student was overwhelmingly elected class president. His name was Jack Baker, and for his campaign poster, he wore blue jeans and 6-inch high heels. The caption on the poster read, "Put yourself in Jack Baker's shoes." His victory made the local news for weeks, with students of every kind celebrating a blow to the establishment. And I realized that there were others, just like me, who wanted to celebrate who they were. And the other people, the normal ones, well, the only reason they gave a damn about what other people were was because they wanted to make sure that nobody confused them with the slim-waisted freak creeps. And I also figured out that everyone was a freak, to some degree, so I had nothing to worry about, except possibly having the bejeebers beaten out of me by someone who wasn't as enlightening as I was. All I had to do was survive 5 more years of school. But I didn't live those years out in quiet desperation. I went to movies, lots of movies. The Godfather, What's Up, Doc, The Poseidon Adventure. Yet one particular film stands out for me, the musical Cabaret. Well, that music movie can't be considered gay per se. When you read between the lines, you come up with a film as queer as a $3 bill. It's about an Englishman, Brian Roberts, who has an affair with the charming and salacious Sally Bowles. He also has a relationship with the handsome and refined Baron Maximilian. When I saw Brian's relationship with Maximilian unfold in the film, my jaw dropped. That was me up there on the screen. I must have returned to see that movie 25 times, by myself, of course. I pay my admission for the first showing and then sit through the next 3 showings until they threw me out because it was no longer matinee time. But each evening, I came out of the theater singing to myself, "What good is sitting alone in your room? Come hear the music play. Life is a cabaret, old chum. Come to the cabaret." Now you might wonder why I'm spending so much time on the early 70s, and I haven't even gotten to the divas or the discos yet. But in this day and age, it's easy to forget how society kept gay men and women in the closet. But then life turned around for me in the fall of 1975. I entered the theater program at the University of Minnesota, and I was in gay heaven. I was encouraged. No. I was cheered into coming out of the closet, because at that time, the theater department wasn't just welcoming gay students. They rolled out the red carpets for them, and I gladly strolled down that runway. And most men's gay introduction to gay culture at that time happened inside of a bar. I'll always remember my first experience going to a gay bar. After class, a classmate invited me to go with a bunch of the guys to a club. "If you'd like to go," he said, "you don't have to go if you don't want to." But the thing was, I wanted to go with all of my heart. And in theory, I knew exactly what I was going to. The premier gay nightclub in the Twin Cities, the Gay 90s. I had to pinch myself to make sure I wasn't dreaming. I'd heard all about the 90s. They played the newest, trendiest music. It was the place to go if you were a gay male. So we all donned our shiniest polyester shirts, unbuttoned to the navel, and put on our platform shoes to celebrate the newest, the trendiest music sensation, disco. At the 90s, the mirror ball twirled all night to the tunes of ABBA, the Bee Gees, and the fabulous Silver Convention, singing their music classic, "Get Up and Boogie." And upstairs, at the show bar, it featured female impersonators and drag queens in the cheesiest productions, pretending to be Judy Garland, Lauren Bacall, or the Queen of Divas, Barbara Streisand. That night, I willingly joined the gay tribe, to be with others of my kind and to celebrate who I was. There was also a rainbow of other people, just like me. It didn't matter that they grew up with different heritages or in different economic classes or even if they had different musical tastes. Believe it or not, there are many gay people who don't like disco. Yet we all had one thing in common. We were gay. Or the L word, or any other letter in that acronym. After I graduated from the university and did an internship, I was hired to work at the Milwaukee Repertory Theater, one of Wisconsin's professional theaters. I was on my way, professionally, yet personally, I also worried. Coming from the cloistered world of the university, would I find friends, people who didn't mind me being what I was? Nah, I quickly discovered that birds of a feather stick together. And for some reason, theater is a nesting spot for many gay men. And at the Rep, after a week long of performances, we all went to Park Avenue, a high-tech disco bar that miraculously turned gay on Sunday evenings. It was the place to see other guys and to be seen by other guys. And as you probably guessed, finding a parking spot would have taken an act of Congress. On one particular night, walking to the bar, we ran across this young man. We had seen him many times before, but never knew his name, only that he was a 7 or an 8 on the hotness scale. Yet at this time, he was far from handsome. He was bloody. He had been beaten when he had gotten out of his car. We ran over to him to offer our help or to call for the police. He begged us not to make that call or even phone his parents. He didn't want them to know. And to our shame, we quickly agreed not to make those calls either. The reason we so quickly agreed wasn't because we wanted to honor his wishes. There was part of us, deep down inside, that didn't want to risk being beaten too, or experience the same kind of treatment that so many queers had experienced before us. But then in 1981, I left Milwaukee to go back home to Minnesota, this time to work on a revival of Annie the Musical. And each tomorrow, the sun came out. Or so I heard. My friends and I were creatures of the night by that time. After each performance, we'd run over to the bars. Life on the bar circuit was a constant cabaret. We left our troubles outside. So life was disappointing. Forget it. We had no troubles at the bars. At the bars, life was beautiful. But life went on outside of the bars. And so did our troubles. On July 3rd, 1981, the New York Times ran an article with the headline, "Rare Cancer Seen in 41 Homosexuals." The AIDS epidemic had begun. Gay men started recoiling in fear. So much was unknown about the disease. In fact, many physicians around the country refused to treat infected individuals. And those that did treat AIDS patients faced eviction from their offices. And morticians followed suit, refusing to care for the dead. Gays started to fight with each other about how to handle the nationwide health crisis. We were living in a catch-22 situation. Did we try to preserve the sexual freedoms and political gains of the 1970s? Or did we risk losing those gains due to a disease that the President of the United States refused to even mention? But then, in 1983, a remarkable musical opened on Broadway, La Cage aux Folles, written by Harvey Fierstein and Jerry Herman. It was based on a French movie farce and won 6 Tony Awards that year, but it garnered far better accolades in the gay community. And it is a story of a gay couple, a manager of a queer nightclub and his partner, a drag queen, and the madness that ensues when their son brings home his fiancée and her ultra-conservative parents. The manager wants to straighten up for the son's future in-laws. It's the drag queen who refuses to kowtow to convention, stating that he is proud of who he is and refuses to change for anyone. He sings the Act Two number that brought down the house each night. I am what I am. I don't want praise. I don't want pity. I bang my own drum. Some think it's noise. I think it's pretty. And so what if I love each sparkle and each bangle? Why not try to see things from a different angle? Your life is a sham till you can shout out, I am what I am. That song became an anthem for gay pride when singing diva Gloria Gaynor turned it into a disco hit. In fact, after Annie each night, we would insert Gaynor's cassette into the tape player and listen to that song over and over and over again. In many ways, it gave us permission to celebrate our uniqueness. It's 35 years later now, and going to the bars no longer excites me. I've been married to the love of my life, Francisco, for almost 20 years. And in fact, we've been married 3 times, because each time a new law granted us a few more rights, we made sure to be at the church altar or the courthouse steps to claim them. But each time we said, I do, I couldn't help think about how our lives would have been different if the world around us had been different. How I would have been different if I didn't have the theater or gay bars as an outlet to find acceptance. Now, many people will say that time has already come. Society is much more welcoming and accepting. LGBTQ kids have many places to go to come at age. Gay community centers, gay sports clubs, even welcoming churches. But considering today's social and political climate, young people can still find it hard to express themselves. So I'd like to challenge everyone here. Create a circle of acceptance that the theater and gay bars gave me. Roll out the red carpet for somebody else, not only accepting and welcoming their differences, but truly celebrating who they are and what makes them truly, truly unique. And if we could all join in singing the closing hymn, number 1014, Standing on the Side of Love.